Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Fan Experience. We are on episode 4, and I am your host, Mike Katos, and alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina.
How you doing, everybody?
The Fan Experience is the podcast that puts the sports fans in the spotlight and behind the podium. We want to hear from you. Have you ever tried to call in to a sports talk radio show just to, you know, to put in a couple of words on your favorite team and what they're doing right or wrong? Well, this is the platform to do it. You know, we'll give you, you know, 20 to 30 minutes to just talk about your team. We want to find out, you know, why you started rooting for that team, the iconic moments behind what really solidified your love for the game, and the fan experiences that you've experienced along the way. As always, this show is produced by Playing the Field. Playing the Field is a sports fan community that wants all the sports fans to come and voice their opinions and share their experiences. And we also have a dating app for sports fans available now at playthefielddating.com. Please go sign up and you might just find your MVP. All right, so last episode we talked about this COVID pandemic, you know, going around the MLB. At that time, I think we had about, you know, 15, 16 Marlins infected. Now they're up to 19, which also includes some staff members. And now the Phillies, who the Marlins played last weekend, now have two staff members of their team infected. So the Phillies have scratched all their games for this weekend. So now the Marlins and the Phillies are both postponing 7 games. You know, if the MLB's original plan was to play 60 games in 66 days. I don't know, like, how you're going to put in all these games and figure out all this scheduling. Obviously, my first thought is, well, you're going to have to push the playoffs back. But now you have extra wild cards and extra playoff scenarios. So, like, are we going to be playing until, you know, mid-November? This is just 1 week, mind you, you know. So all these people are getting infected in the first week. And, you know, if we keep going, you know, a couple of different teams get it. The MLB needs to figure out something, and they need to figure out something quick. You know, Rick, I want to hear your thoughts on all this.
Well, good evening, everybody. Good evening, Mike. How you doing? You know, it's something that was inevitable. I don't think that MLB truly sort of thought out a scenario or gamed out the scenario that a whole team would get infected like the Marlins just did. And not to mention that just all of a sudden that the Phillies got a couple of the staffers that are infected and is going to throw this all into chaos. And the question you just asked, is they're going to play into November? I don't think so. I think they're going to go at this on the fly. I think they're going to just sort of play games. If they have to postpone games, play doubleheaders, just adapt to this on the fly to make sure that the season progresses and ends. Because the last thing I think MLB wants is to just cancel the season, because I think it will be a tremendous setback, not just for baseball, for the country as well. And the question is, what are they going to do about it? I was reading today that they're going to put protocol officers, you know, COVID-19 protocol officers with their respected teams. Well, here's the question. Why didn't they think of that beforehand? Like, why didn't they say, you know what, let's have somebody who's going to keep an eye on these guys. Hey, you can't do this. You can't shake hands. And at the same time, you know, I get it. After a while, people are going to get tired and be like, all right, I got it, man. But why wasn't that thought of in the first place? Why didn't MLB game out a scenario where if a team did get infected, what would happen? You know, think things through. I don't know that MLB thought all of this through. But now that we're in the situation that we're in, I think we're just going to have to go by the seat of our pants and adapt as they go along. And I think for the rest of the league, and it's also a wake-up call for the players. Like, you guys can get sick. Like, you can derail your season. Like, if you really want to take this seriously and if you really want to play, you got to take it seriously. You got to stick to the protocol, six feet apart, no spitting, social distancing, wear a mask if you have to, no high-fiving, and that's what you have to do. And I think the players have to realize that it's serious business. And so I think for MLB, the good news is it looks like it's just isolated to the Marlins and a couple of the staffers of the Phillies. The bad news is that obviously Philadelphia has postponed games at Citizens Field indefinitely, or I think until further notice. And the Marlins won't play again until Monday. Now, who knows what they're going to field? I mean, who are they going to get on the team? Are they going to get guys from the minor leagues? I mean, are they going to get other players? Do they have reserves? We don't know. So going along, it's going to be interesting to see how this sort of plays out in the next few days. But for MLB, if they can stop the bleeding here, and if you can just control it here and have tighter protocols on the players as they travel, hotels, go out, what have you, then I think we're going to be okay. But if another team gets exposed, another guys get sick, then they're really going to have to consider whether they're going to cancel the season or not. So it should be interesting to see the next couple of days how this all plays out for the Major League Baseball.
Yeah, well, the last, you know, 3-4 days, it hasn't been looking better. Let's just say that. Every day has been looking a little bit more worse, you know, by the day. You know, and yeah, you're right. They did not think this through. And, you know, that's why we're where we are, you know, and especially with the Marlins, you know, they're playing in Miami. It's a hot spot, you know, and you can't just go out to dinner and go out to a bar and not expect the consequences to come and follow you, you know. Exactly. And, you know, you just have to. You have to be cautious of above anything else, you know. But MLB, I mean, this isn't the only thing that they messed up on. You know, let's just be real.
Touch on that real quick, and just to follow up on that, you know, the Reds had, you know, Mike Moustakas and Nick Senzel, who I guess they showed some symptoms or reported it, and now they're appealing. They're appealing their absence, their mandated absence, because they're like, listen, we don't have any symptoms. We did test positive, but MLB is not letting them back on the field. So that's another issue is going to come up. Players are going to start appealing if they report sniffles or what have you. And it's another issue that comes up. So it's a lot of things that got to play out here. And MLB just has to think this a little, you know, through a little more clearly and see where it goes. But I hope for the sake of baseball that we can continue playing.
Yeah. I didn't hear about the Moustakas and the Reds players, but I did hear that, you know, there's that swab test, and then there's a rapid test that a couple of them are getting, and they're not proving the accurate results. Right. So, you know, I don't know what test that they took. Obviously, they probably took the rapid, they tested positive, and then they took the swab, tested negative, I guess, or at least they don't think that they have it, and they're awaiting the results of the swab. I don't know. I don't know what the case is, but.
Oh, what happened was that they told them they had some symptoms. I mean, they reportedly tested negative and they weren't showing any symptoms, but at abundance of precaution, the league, you know, said you're not coming on the field until further notice. So
yeah,
you know, that plays out.
Yeah. I mean, we got to err on the side of caution with this anyway. Another thing, you know, that obviously Manfred and MLB, you know, did not handle correctly, you know, was the Astros cheating scandal. You know, no Astro players received any kind of suspension. So Tuesday night, Joe Kelly of the Dodgers, you know, the team that, you know, most directly was affected by the Astros cheating, you know, he threw at some heads, you know, which I don't condone it. Yeah, I don't condone throwing it at heads, you know, because, you know, it's a dangerous thing, a baseball hitting somebody in the head, you know. So I don't disagree with the suspension for Kelly. Okay. I disagree with the fact that the Astros players never got any reprimands for it. So if you're going to do it, you have to do it both ways. You can't just pick and choose who you're going to suspend, you know, so the cheaters just get off, you know, scot-free. And I don't agree with. What do you think?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I think baseball completely misjudged both situations. I mean, when you talk about the cheating scandal, Rob Manfred, to think that the players were going to be okay with, you know what, if you tell us what happened, we're not going to punish you. To think that the other players in the league were just going to be fine with that, completely misjudged that. He completely misread the situation. And now for Joe Kelly, remember, Joe Kelly was on the Red Sox that year. That knocked the Astros, that knocked them out, you know, that they lost. And so, you know, Joe Kelly comes into the Dodgers, and obviously he throws at Bregman, and Bregman's one of the most, you know, not the most liked guys on that team. And then he strikes out Correa and then he goes, nice swing, bitch, with that comment. And then they give him an 8-game suspension. But I also think that it was part of it also was the brawl. You know, these guys, as they got closer to each other, They're breaking the protocol. They're not social distancing. They're not 6 feet apart. Some, you know, an exposure could have happened. Not that there was, because those guys get tested, but you don't know. But I think, again, Major League Baseball, Bob Manfred, again, has miscalculated these situations. I for the life of me, I don't know. I think they're so afraid of the unions, but I don't know how he's seen that. Nope, everybody would have been fine with that. This isn't the steroid era where people were taking steroids and going to be like, all right, you know, it's steroids, whatever. People, the players were okay with that. You know, some players were fine with that because most of the league was using it. This was different. This was stealing signs from a team so they can have a competitive advantage on the field to win the playoffs and eventually win a World Series. And you were taking, you were affecting jobs, you were affecting, you know, managerial positions, you were affecting a whole league. And for them, and then for baseball to come back and Manfred suspend this kid 8 games. I mean, if you notice some of the quotes today in social media, some of the players were like, hey, I'm with Joe Kelly. And they're right.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we don't want somebody getting hit in the head, but Joe Kelly was standing up for players. And I think he was speaking for the league as a whole to say, what you guys did wasn't right. I'm going to send a message just so you get it, because you're not going to get off scot-free because there aren't any fans in here, and deal with it. And if Major League Baseball and Bob Manfred were not going to address it, then we will. And baseball, and basically Joe Kelly policed that situation. So look, I'm aboard with Joe Kelly sticking up for baseball. I don't want anybody to get hit in the head, but 8 games is too long. I hope they reduce it during appeal and you know, we get back to normal here. But the Astros are going to have to face this from the rest of the teams in the league moving forward. Yeah, I mean, guys are going to throw at them and they're just going to have to deal with it. Suck it up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we can touch on it a little bit more later if we want, but I don't want to keep our guests waiting for too long. So now we have joining us Julia Salata, wrestler, women's wrestler for the U.S. Women's National Team.
Hey,
Julia, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
Doing good.
We're doing great.
Sit up a little better here. There we go.
All right. Well, nice to meet you. You know, big fan of what you're doing. You know, I've caught up you know, a couple of things, and your organization is great. But I want to, you know, just touch on the beginning stages first. You know, what got you into liking women's wrestling?
So when I was a kid, I was really into professional wrestling. Like, The Undertaker and Kane were, like, the coolest people I'd ever seen in my life. I was a big John Cena fan back when he kind of first came on the scene. And I was like, you know, I went to WrestleMania. I loved it. And when I was in eighth grade, my middle school decided to start middle school wrestling for the first time. And I brought this flyer home to my mom, and I was like, Mom, I want to wrestle. And she's like, you know, that's not fake stuff that you see on TV, right? I'm like, I know. But, like, I think it'd be fun. And, like, I grew up with all guys around my neighborhood and stuff. We would, like, recreate WrestleMania in my basement. So I was like, I think I can do this. So she ended up letting me join. And at the end of, like, it was a short season. It was, like, 6 weeks. But at the end of it, we had a middle school city championship with all six of the middle schools in our district. And I ended up winning against all guys. I was the only girl in the entire tournament, much less my weight class. And I won the whole thing. And that tournament was actually held at the high school I was going to be attending. So the high school coach approached my parents, and he's like, hey, you know, I don't know if she has any intentions of continuing to wrestle in high school, but we'd love to have her. I don't have any girls on the team now. I've never had a girl ever, but I think she has potential, and if she wants to continue, we'd love to have her. And that's kind of how I got started.
That's amazing. So, you know, you mentioned, obviously, you love Undertaker and Kane, you know, as far as the, you know, sports entertainment side of wrestling, but as far as the professional wrestling, was there somebody that you looked up to and, you know, really got you hooked on that, the professional wrestling side?
Like actual wrestling, like amateur wrestling?
Yeah.
No, honestly, I didn't have any, I was an only child growing up. I had never even really seen professional wrestling on TV. It was really just like the fake stuff that drew me in. So once I started wrestling, you know what I mean? I started, you know, developing, you know, what I call them, like, idols, but girls I really looked up to. When I was in, I graduated from middle school in 2007. 2008 was the second year that there was women's wrestling in the Olympics. And that year, Randy Miller won a bronze medal. And so that was, like, the first time I'd ever actually seen another female wrestler, not only, like, on TV, but, like, winning. And in a weird turn of events, 8 years after that, I actually wrestled Randy Miller at Olympic Trials.
Wow.
So it's like the Drake line. That's like your idols become your rivals or something like that. Like that was me against Randy Miller in Olympic Trials. But yeah, I didn't really have, you know, that first, you know, idol or someone I looked up to that drew me in. It was just kind of my own personal interest. And, you know, obviously there are people from that point on that I looked up to, but, it was just kind of an inherent thing that I knew I wanted to wrestle.
That's awesome, Julia. Thanks for coming on tonight. Julia, I got to ask, because you said you were the only girl on your team when you went to high school. Tell us a little bit about that, because I could imagine that's got to be tough for you being the only girl on an all-boys team. Like, were they accepting like a camaraderie? Tell us some of the experiences you had to deal with as you were growing in the sport.
I got a little bit of everything. There were guys that were definitely weirded out by me being there. There were guys that were totally cool with it, because there were quite a few guys in the team that I was already friends with. Okay. Whether I with them that year in middle school, or they were just guys that I knew that, you know, just my friends. And they were pretty cool about it. They're like, dude, you're here to wrestle. Like, as long as you are here to show up and work hard and want to win, which I did, I'm super competitive. They didn't really have an issue. There were some of like the guys in the team that were kind of like true, like wrestling culture nerds, I guess they call it. Like, you know, I mean, like super hard nosed and gritty. And they gave me a hard time, but I think after that first year or two, they kind of started to realize that I was really just there to wrestle. Like, it wasn't like something that I was, you know, I wasn't trying to get attention. I wasn't there to not work. I wanted to win, and this was the sport that I wanted to do it in. And I think, too, at the end of my sophomore year, I won my first national title, and that was against women at the women's national tournament. But I think from that point, they're like, this isn't just some random girl. Like, this is the best girl in the country, and she's in our room. We should probably take her seriously. So the longer I was in that room, the more respect I got. By the time I was a senior, like, I was a varsity starter. Like, I was, you know, one of the better kids in the room. And I didn't really have any issues anymore. But very often, it wasn't really even for my own team. Other than those, like, one or two guys who, you know, just, I don't know if it was, like, they were uncomfortable or what. But it was when we would go to tournaments. And it was guys on the teams that I would compete against that were kind of like dicks about it, honestly. But I kind of, looking back on it, I kind of understand it. You know, from a guy's perspective, when you're wrestling a girl, if you win, you know, you're the asshole. If you don't win, everyone on your team is going to make fun of you. You know what I mean? So, like, it's kind of a no situation for him. And I get that, which is part of the reason why with wrestling a girl right now, I'm working on getting state sanctioning for high school women's wrestling in all 50 states. So, but that was kind of my experience. You know, there was some good, there was some bad, but overall, the reason I think I succeeded so much in college is because I came from a really good high school room. Overall, I had good teammates. I had good coaching. And I wouldn't have wanted to do it any other way.
That's awesome. And you mentioned that you're trying to establish high school wrestling. You know, when you were growing up, I'm surprised that more high school wrestling for women as, you know, you were younger. I mean, what year were you in high school? 2011, 2012, something like that?
I played 2011, yeah.
2011. So it's surprising. Tell us about that. How difficult has it been to get women's wrestling in high school, college on the map, especially now that the sport is growing in popularity?
It's getting easier. So to give you kind of like a little bit of perspective, in 2016, only six states had sanctioned high school women's wrestling. And it had been those same six states for a while with no additional movement. Hawaii, Washington, California, Texas, Tennessee, and Oregon, maybe, I think was the sixth. You fast forward now, 4 years later, and we just sanctioned our 28th state, which is a significant jump. I mean, 22 states in you know, 4 years is significant. So, like you mentioned, it's growing in popularity. It's actually the fastest growing high school sport in the country, specifically women's wrestling. So it's getting easier as the sport becomes more accepted, I guess. I think the popularity of women's MMA has helped quite a bit as well, where people are kind of normalizing seeing women in combat sports, which is awesome. They're kind of paving the way for us a little bit, but there's still some states that are a little bit stubborn. A lot of these state organizations, it's still a good old boys club, and they think that wrestling is a men's sport, so it's a little bit more of an uphill battle. But in most of the states we're seeing, if they're not sanctioned yet, it's mostly like an infrastructure and planning issue. It's not so much like it's not accepted, they're just like, we just need to get our ducks in a row and start actually making this happen and figuring out logistics and financial stuff. So it's really only a matter of time. There's not a whole lot of resistance. So there's still a couple states that are moving slower than they should, but for the most part, I think in the next couple of years, we'll be pretty close to all 50 states.
Awesome. You know, I completely commend what you're doing. You know, I'm definitely as a girl dad, you know, father of two girls, you know, I want them to know that they can do anything they want to, you know, no matter what, you know, if it's, you know, wrestling or, you know, maybe even playing in the big leagues, you know, for baseball, which, you know, no females are allowed to play as of yet. But, you know, talk to us about, you know, getting invited to wrestle for Team USA and the women's national team.
So it's all qualification based. I made my first age group national team when I was a junior in high school. I made my first cadet Pan Am team. So I went and competed at the, which is essentially 16 and under. So I went and competed at the cadet Pan American Championships when I was in high school, won a silver medal there. And that was kind of the point where I realized, like, I can be on Team USA. You know what I mean? I was good at a lot of sports growing up. I played hockey, I played softball, I played volleyball. But there are a lot of girls who are also very good at those sports. There weren't a whole lot of girls who are very good at wrestling. You know, I could have played Division I in softball probably if I wanted to. But like I said, there's a lot of girls who are good at softball. And to really go to that next level, you have to really find your niche. And making an age group national team in high school, I was like, this is the sport I can do it in. So I ended up deciding to wrestle in college, and by the end of my sophomore year, I qualified for my first senior U.S. national team, which is like the highest international, like Olympic level wrestling. So it's based on placing top three at world team trials. So every year that national team resets, it's the top three girls at each weight class. And I made my first one my sophomore year college. Sorry. So I had just turned 20 years old, which is pretty young to be making Team USA. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, for the last 7 years, that's kind of been my thing, wrestling for the country, which is awesome. I've gotten to travel to like 35 different countries through that. I was a training partner at the 2016 Olympics, so I got to go down there. I was in Rio. I didn't compete, obviously, but got to experience that. Still trying to make the Olympic team for 2021 now. But it's just been such an awesome experience. I got to wrestle at the World Cup in 2018 as part of Team USA. So it's just really been awesome. I mean, representing your country is cool to begin with, but even some of the experiences off the mat, or just getting to travel and see so many different countries and so many different cultures, you know, free of charge. I get paid to do it, which is really awesome. I'm really grateful. And you're kind of saying, you have two daughters. Like, I want younger girls to know this is a path for them. If they have goals within the sport of wrestling, they can do some really cool things if that's what they choose to pursue.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations on all the accomplishments that you have you had going on. Now, how about the people on your team of, you know, Team USA, you know, when they were in their high school, when they were learning, you know, you were the only girl in your high school, you know, how was their route to, you know, to Team USA?
So it's kind of like a generational thing. We're kind of in like what I consider like our third wave of US women. It's still relatively new. We just became an Olympic sport in 2004. So like we always, like when I was like coming up, made my first couple national teams, we had like the older girls and they had their older girls. And now I'm one of the older girls, which is a really hard thing to process for me because I'm only 27, but I'm seen as one of the older girls. So my generation and older, we all had similar experiences. More often than not, we were the only girl on our high school team. Grew up wrestling all boys, both at our high schools and our club practices. So it's pretty similar. There were a couple states that were sanctioned. I have a couple teammates who did wrestle girls. So the ones in California, but I'd say 90% of us had an experience similar to what I did. The generation below us, which isn't that much younger, I'd say maybe like 4 or 5 years younger than us, that's where it starts to change a little bit, where they did have sanctioned high school women's wrestling. Like I said, we have 28 states now that are sanctioned. And more than anything else, this group just had more competition opportunities against women in general. My group kind of had, you know, we had a women's national championship, but that's kind of where it ended. It was, you know, the age group world team trials, which I was talking about earlier, for, you know, essentially U17 and U23. And we had the national championships for high school. Whereas these girls now have like countless women's competition opportunities. They still have those same national world team trials events, but now there's like, you know, even like some of like the more established men's tournaments now have a women's division. There's a tournament called Super 32 down in North Carolina, which it's kind of like the preseason tournament for men's high school wrestling. really elite competition. And a couple of years ago, they decided to add a women's division. So now women get the opportunity to compete at this super elite preseason tournament, which is so awesome. On one hand, I'm kind of bitter because I'm like, man, I would have loved to wrestle in Super 32. They give away these cool, like, giant belts. Again, big professional wrestling fan. The big shiny belts really do it for me. But so I was like, I'm kind of jealous. At the same time, like, man, that's so cool that these girls are getting to have all these opportunities that I never did. To travel more, compete against other women on a more frequent basis. And it's just been really cool to watch that progression of the sport over the past 10, 15 years.
You know, Julia, you're a pioneer, you know? And I wonder if you or taken some time just to step back and think about sort of the trail you blazed, right? Like you were in your high school, on your high school team, all these accomplishments. You beat a lot of guys. You were the top, one of the top wrestlers. Have you had a moment to sort of step back and say, wow, what have I accomplished? Look at the road I've paved. Say to yourself, I mean, did I really accomplish this? I mean, reflect on that.
I have kind of. I think one of the things that we always talk about, again, like as a national team, is that we're almost kind of jaded to the things that we've done because, like, we're not unique in the sense like I'm the only girl who've ever done this because all of my friends did it as well. You know what I mean? I have 30 national team teammates who all have a similar experience. So to us, it's like, yeah, like this is normal. This is just what we did. And then I talk to people like outside of the wrestling community and they're like, do you realize how cool what you're doing and what you've done is? I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. That is pretty abnormal and pretty, you know, like, you know, trailblazing to 99% of the world. But to me, it's just like that was my experience. And everyone has their own journey. Mine just happened to have been a little bit more unique than some. But I'm really proud to have been, you know, the pioneer of the sport and to just kind of pave the way for the girls before me. Like I said, I'm kind of jealous of things that they get to now, but I take some solace in knowing that I kind of helped create that path for them in some ways. But it is pretty awesome. And I'm kind of like the waning stages of my career. I was actually going to retire this year after the Olympics. Now, obviously, that got pushed back a year, but I kind of started being more reflective this past year because of that, thinking that, like, you know, I expected to be retired by this time because Olympic wrestling would have been done in the Olympics by today. So I've been, like, more reflective, thinking, like, what have I done as an athlete? And then I think, like, what I did as an athlete didn't actually matter. Like, what I've done as, like, what have I done for the sport of women's wrestling? And that goes far beyond any medals or accolades or what happened on the mat. So that's actually what I'm most proud of is the things that I've accomplished in terms of progressing women's wrestling forward.
That's wonderful. And you said you're planning on retirement. So now when you plan on retirement, are you going to take the next coaching right now? But is your next step to be a permanent coach, a higher profile role, maybe in the women's national team or in college sports or even on the professional?
So what I'm kind of thinking, I do coach right now. I'm the assistant coach at King University, which is a Division II school down here in Tennessee. As of right now, in terms of, we just became an NCAA sport this past January, women's wrestling as a whole, which is awesome. We have an emerging sport. So with that, we're probably going to start seeing a lot more Division I programs being added. Right now, we only have one, Presbyterian College down in South Carolina. They're a smaller D1 school. But now that we have emerging sports status, we're going to see a lot more D1s getting added here pretty quickly. And I would love to be not only one of the first Division I coaches, but the first female Division I coach. I love coaching. I think that's the next stepping stone for me. It's something that I'm passionate about. So I could definitely see, you know, going in that direction. And it's a space that I'm comfortable in too. I thought about going into MMA as well. I train jiu-jitsu as well. I've done a little bit of Muay Thai, so I'm pretty beat up, which is the primary reason retire next year. I need two different shoulder surgeries. I need a back surgery. I need surgery.
Wow.
I'm like, nothing that's like pressing, like needs to happen tomorrow, but like I've been putting it off for a lot of years and I just need to get it fixed up. So that's kind of my one hesitation on an MMA route, but I think I'd be pretty good at it. So we'll see. And I've also kind of started thinking about like maybe an administrative role. I work for a nonprofit right now. Wrestle Like a Girl. I'm repping my shirt right now, if you can see it. And through that, I was kind of overseeing that NCAA emerging sports status bid throughout this past year and seeing how the NCAA operates, for better and for worse, has really given me a new perspective. So I've kind of been thinking about going that administrative route too, maybe as an athletic director, something along those lines. But in some capacity, I'm going to stay involved with the sport. and specifically at the collegiate level, I think, whether it's administrative or as a coach. I love collegiate sports as a whole, and I love women's wrestling. So that's kind of the perfect marriage, I think, going forward.
Awesome. So I just put a, you know, couple of places that they can find you. You know, I know you do this Wrestle Like a Girl, like you mentioned. And talk to us about a little bit how she wrestles.
So how she wrestles was kind of a little thing that popped into my brain a couple weeks ago and has since taken off from there. So we've been having, I don't want to say we've been having issues, but the women's wrestling community has kind of been going through a phase where we're realizing that not all wrestling media is kind of treating us fairly in terms of coverage, in terms of pay, kind of similar to what the U.S. soccer team went through not that long ago, but on a smaller scale. There was recently a card put on by one of our media associations, kind of like similar to UFC card, where it was like prearranged matches, and they originally put no women on the card. And it was kind of like, dude, like, why are you ignoring, you know, our, I don't know how much you guys know about women's wrestling, but we're pretty solid. We're perennially a top three team in the world. We had three different world champions last year out of 10 weight classes. Like, we're pretty good. We have a pretty solid following among the community. So this organization's response was to offer a couple of our girls spots on the card for 1/50th of what they were paying the men, literally 1/50th. And we're like, that's not right. And this organization tried to say, like, you know, that with the women just don't, you know, it's a business and the women don't bring in that, you know, they just don't have value. And we're like, well, how can we have value when you won't even cover us? Like, we can't develop a fan base if you're not willing to help us create that fan base. I mean, you watch like ESPN and stuff, like how many times do you see features on these athletes and like they like go to their houses for a day or like follow them their life, like what's their nutrition plan? Like, people want to see the behind the scenes of these athletes, you know what I mean? Like, people are curious to see like who is this person off the court or off the field or like what are they like. And they do this for our men's wrestlers, but not the women. We're like, how do you want, you know, if you want to create value for us, you also have to cover us and make us marketable. And they don't want to do that. And this is a fight we've been having with them for years. So I had this idea for how she wrestles. Like, if they're not going to cover us and they're not going to show who we are as people and you know, help us create a fan base, we're just going to do it ourselves. Like, we can do this ourselves. So I kind of assembled a team of some of the other national team members, girls who I'd kind of been having offline conversations with. And I'm like, we're going to launch this platform and we're just going to tell our stories. Like, it doesn't need to be anything more complicated than that. We're just going to show who we are as people. So we dropped this graphic on a Wednesday that just said, like, how she wrestles coming July 19th with nothing else, like not what it was about. Like, and again, like all this other stuff was happening on Twitter about like the women are on the car, they're not getting paid a, you know, a fair wage. Like, so everyone was immediately curious. And then that following Sunday, we started posting all of these short videos about like, and again, it was like how she wrestles with whatever. So I did mine on how she wrestles with balance. Someone did how she wrestles with loss. Someone did how she wrestles with resilience and vulnerability and all of these things that included like kind of like a personal anecdote about how wrestling has either brought us through something or how wrestling has taught us something. And people bought in right away. Within the first 24 hours of it being launched on Twitter and Instagram, on Twitter alone, on the How She Wrestles platform, we had 25,000 unique views. And then if you include the views that were on our, you know, like we all posted our video to our own social media as well. If you include those, we were pretty close to 100,000 unique views in a 24-hour span, which is pretty significant. And people immediately started saying, like, you know, I didn't know who, like, I one in particular, one of the girls that I kind of recruited for this was Alexis Porter. And they're like, I didn't know who Alexis Porter was before this, but now I'm going to make sure to watch her in the future because, like, this made me buy in. And, like, this, there was all these people saying, like, I didn't know this about this athlete. I can't wait to watch them wrestle next time, knowing what I know about them now. So it really took off. And now we're kind of getting into, like, weekly topics. Like, this week is how she wrestles with confidence. So we're all posting about how we wrestle with confidence and encouraging younger athletes to get involved as well. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's not just about us. It's about empowering our younger athletes to show that, like, you have role models. Like, you aren't the only one to go through some of these things that you've gone through. And, you know, you're cool and awesome. And don't let anybody else tell you otherwise just because you're a woman in a male-dominated sport. And we have also had a lot of male athletes, too, which has been awesome. A lot of our, like, high-profile men's freestyle wrestlers have been 100% on board. So it's just really good to know that we're all kind of on the same page. And we have, you know, some of our best men sticking up for us as well, which has been great. So this project's really taking off. Next week, we're going to be doing, well, I'm not going to tell you. You have to find out. We'll have a new topic next week.
All right. So I'll check it out next week. Yeah.
That's how you guys check it out. Yeah. But so each week is going to be a different weekly topic where we tackle, you know, hard things, we tackle easy things. We've really been brainstorming about some like kind of like goofy topics to go to, so it's not all heavy all the time. And look at us, we're impressed and all this. So, but it's been a pretty cool project, and it's got a lot of really good response. And I'm happy it took off as well as it did. You know, it was my idea, if you will, but its success has really been a total team effort. On behalf of the whole national team, which participated, really got it off the ground going, and we're gonna do some pretty cool things going forward.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, in just what, a week and a half, you know, it's doing so well. So, you know, congratulations for that. Absolutely. And I know you said you know, like some of the other combat sports. So I just want to ask if you follow boxing or at least read the news last week about Tyson coming back. You know, wondering what your thoughts are on 54-year-old. Tyson coming back to fight one more fight.
I'm excited to see it for sure. I am a boxing fan. I actually went to what was supposed to be Floyd Mayweather's last fight when he fought Berto. In Las Vegas, I was actually at that fight. Nice. I was in Vegas for an 8-day span. The day I got there was a Saturday, and I watched UFC 191 in Garden Arena. And then 7 days later, went back to Garden Arena to watch that Mayweather and Berto fight. So that was a fun week for sure. But I'm kind of interested to see what happens. I mean, at the end of the day, Mike Tyson is Mike Tyson, but like you said, he's in his mid 50s. Who knows what kind of shape he's in? Who knows what he's been doing? But I'd be kicking myself if I counted him out too quickly. But I mean, I don't know if you guys fought MMA, but like Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell fought a couple, I think last year. And it was just like a mess. Like, it was like, what are we watching? So I hope it's not one of those situations, but I don't have super high expectations for him, but I'm definitely going to watch. I'm curious to see what happens. I mean, like I said, Mike Tyson's Mike Tyson. That's must watch boxing in my opinion. So I'll be curious to see how it goes.
Well, Julia, let me ask you this. So, you know, for our viewers who are not too familiar with boxing, tastes too, like, because I was reading that you have a couple of superstitions, too many to count, but take us to your mindset. Take us to what goes on in your mind, how you prep, like before you walk out to a match, before you hit that mat and you take on your opponent. Take our fans and our viewers to a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes before you get out there and perform.
So it's definitely gotten a little bit different in the past couple of years. When I was like in college and stuff, like, I don't want to say I was cocky, but I was pretty confident. I was convinced. I'm good at this. Like, you know, I was a 2-time collegiate national champion, undefeated. Like, I kind of knew I was a shit a little bit, you know, like, I'm pretty cocky. So like, I was pretty relaxed at tournaments. Like, I was always kind of like, yeah, I'm going to do pretty well. Like, I'm going to beat this girl, like, whatever. But like I said, like, in the last couple of years, knowing that my career was kind of in its later stages, I've gotten a little bit more emotional. This year at the US Open, it was the qualifier for Olympic trials. I had a moment after I got done warming up where I just, like, started crying randomly. And like, everyone's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But like, it just occurred to me, this is my last US Open. Now here we are. It wasn't my last US Open anymore, but
right.
I wasn't nervous. I wasn't upset, but like, I was just like, this is my last ever like senior nationals. Like this is a pretty big deal. You know what I mean? I've been doing this, you know, for, you know, on the senior level for 10 years alone. So I've kind of gotten a lot more like grateful, I guess is the way to put it. Like, when I'm warming up for a match, like, it's not so much like, oh, I'm going to hit this girl's ass. It's kind of like, dude, I get to still do it. Like, how many people at 27 years old still get to compete at the highest level and do what they want? Like, most people's careers end in high school, and a fewer number yet, it ends in college, and there's a very, very slim percentage of people that get to do this for a career, essentially. So now it's kind of, I'm going to compete. It's not that same mindset of, like, I'm going to kill this girl. It's kind of like, man, I get to still do this. I can't wait to get out there and just, like, put it all on the line. So there's been a little bit of a mentality shift in that regard. In terms of, like, my pre-match rituals, I'm pretty ritualistic. My left sock always goes on first. My left shoe always goes on first. I have to warm up for 5 minutes. I always warm up to either like Disney music or like musical theater, like something like happy. Again, it used to be a lot of like, you know, EDM or like heavy metal, Metallica, Led Zeppelin type of stuff. And now it's like, I just want to be in a good mood. Like sometimes it's country music. I don't know. Just something that like makes me happy rather than like aggressive. Warm up a little bit, get a good drill in. And then I just kind of like recover, rehydrate a little bit. And then I just start pacing. Like about like 8 matches before mine, which is pretty long, I just start pacing. Like it's a lot of pacing with, you know, my headphones in. And then I always have to do 2 squats with like a jump in between before I'm ready. I kind of like squat into like a butterfly stretch, jump up, yeah, do a knee squat back down again, do a butterfly stretch, jump back up, and I'm like, I'm good to go. I always have to be the first person out on the mat. So as soon as the match before mine is done, before that girl's hand is even done getting raised, I'm on the mat pacing. And then we shake hands. I always tap the mat really quickly and the whistle blows and we go. But it's that same routine every single time, without a doubt. It's just to kind of like, you know, get in my right mind frame. You know what I mean? Like once I've done all of that, I know I'm ready. Like as ridiculous as it is, like, if I tap the mat, is it going to affect how I wrestle? Probably not. If I don't pace and do a knee tuck, is it going to affect how I wrestle? Probably not. But in my head, it's like, that's what I need. Like, that's what I need to make sure that, like, I'm firing all cylinders. So it's worked out for me so far. So I'm going to keep doing it.
And a final one for me, your proudest moment in your career in women's wrestling.
Oh, boy, this is a tough one. Honestly, there's probably a number of coaching moments that were my proudest, to be entirely honest. You know, I've coached 8 different national champions at this point. I've coached a national championship team. So those are all pretty proud moments for me because I feel like I said, I won 2 national titles myself. I was a 3-time national finalist in college. And like, I never felt the same emotions that I do as when I coach a national champion. That's much more overwhelming for me. And much more stressful too. Again, I was like pretty confident in college. I'm like, of course I'm going to win this match. Whereas like when you're coaching, it's like, oh my God, don't stop what we talked about. That wasn't the game plan. Stop. Like, what are you doing? So it's a little more stressful, but I think those as an athlete, I think winning the US Open in 2018 was a pretty proud moment. I mean, that's, you know, in terms of like senior level competition, winning a senior national title is pretty cool. Being on the 2018 World Cup team was really fun. I mean, that's, you know, essentially the team world championships. So that was a pretty cool moment. Because that's one of the few times where we actually compete as a team. You know, wrestling is a really individual sport, so World Cup is one of the few times where we can actually, like, feel like Team USA, where other people's results affect your own. So that was a really cool event. And then I think, honestly, probably my last collegiate match was pretty awesome. When I was in high school, I was a 3-time national champ at the high school level, and I could have gone to whatever program I wanted to. And I ended up signing with a team that was only in their 2nd year. Everyone thought I was nuts. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, dude, I believe in this team. I believe in this coach. That's actually, you know, now I coach with my head coach. And my senior year, we won our 2nd team national title, and I won my 2nd individual national title. It was just kind of like I knew I made the right choice, like as a team, with the coach that I won, with the teammates that I liked. So it was a pretty proud moment just to know that, like, we went from a 2nd year team that went 1-9 in duels the year I signed to being a 2-time national championship program, and I won my 2nd national title there. So a little bit of vindication, but I'm just really proud as well to have been a part of that program and one of the, you know, kind of, again, like a pioneer of that program and just kind of believing in what they were trying to accomplish.
Awesome. So, you know, the Olympics were obviously supposed to be this year, you know, with COVID had to push it back, you know, so how much, you know, has really been like derailed in your case as far as the Olympics go and your coaching? So have you guys been doing anything? Yeah, I know the WWE is still performing and stuff with no fans, you know, so they're still doing close contact. What have you guys been doing in the COVID pandemic?
I've kind of been a little bit of an advantage in the sense that I was actually able to still train a little bit. A lot of girls were not able to. Their rooms either got shut down or they had no partners. And I was fortunate in that I'm a coach and I have access to a wrestling room and I still had partners here. You know, all being pretty safe, you know, I was only working out with the same 1 or 2 partners throughout the whole thing. And I wasn't, you know, usually I trained 2x a day, 4 or 5 days a week, and I wasn't doing that. But I was able to get on the mat for, you know, 1 hour or so, 3 days a week, which is significantly more than most were. And given... like I said, how beat up I am, and the fact that I have to go a whole other year now, probably wasn't the worst thing to be able to take it easy, but still get some mat time in. So I was really fortunate in that. I was still working out every day, quite a bit actually. But, you know, my training changed up. I was doing a lot more functional stuff instead of like heavy Olympic lifts and that kind of a thing. But I like I said, I was in the minority with that. A lot of, you know, with wrestling being such a close contact sport, a lot of girls and, you know, a lot of guys too, for that matter, weren't able to train the way they're used to. They couldn't lift. They couldn't get in the wrestling room. So everyone was kind of like doing like garage workouts and stuff. And I was like, here I am in the wrestling room. Sorry about that, guys. So I kind of lucked out in that regard. And I, you know, kind of a leg up that I have going into the 2021 now Olympic year. But it was definitely a change. There were a lot of unknowns, you know, that we were having weekly national team calls. They were just kind of giving us updates on, you know, return to the mat, return to competition. You know, at the time, we didn't even know if the Olympics were going to get postponed or if Olympic trials were going to get postponed. So it was kind of a bit stressful, like just not knowing. You spend, you know, when you're an Olympic athlete or an Olympic sport, you kind of think in four-year cycles. I mean, you don't think like, I'm going to go one more year. It's I'm going to go four more years because the ultimate goal is being an Olympian. So I've spent the last 4 years training for this year, and to have it kind of taken away from you is a very odd thing. Like, we think in 4 year cycles, not 5 year cycles. And that 1 year makes a huge difference. So, it's kind of weird to make that mentality shift of like, I not having one Olympic year, but having an Olympic 2 years. Like it's just, it's strange. The whole timeline gets thrown off. Your periodization gets thrown off. You know, wrestling being a weight controlled sport, I went down a weight class this year to 136, which I hadn't seen since like my sophomore year of high school. So I spent a whole year getting my weight down. I'm like, shoot, I have to stay down here a whole other year. Like that's going to be a little bit rough. So there's definitely been some adjustments, and it's going to be another year of adjustments now going forward, but everyone's in the same boat. No one's at more or less of a disadvantage than others. You know, even from the other country standpoint, once we get to the Olympics, everyone, you know, other countries were in the same boat more or less. So everyone's just trying to get through it. I think everyone's doing the best they can, and I just hope that I handled it better than everyone else. I mean, I think a lot of this Olympic year is going to come down to like who managed their time the best, who took advantage of their resources, and who was able to make the most of a bad situation and kind of being dealt a crappy hand. So I hope I did the best job of it. And next April, we'll find out for sure.
It sounds like you handled it the right way. You still stayed active and in shape. And we wish you about the best for the Olympic qualifiers. And so with how she wrestles and wrestles like a girl, we wish you nothing but the best over there. I think we lost. Okay, there we go. Yeah. So yeah, if anyone wants to follow her, at the bottom is her Instagram and Twitter, Jay Salata, and follow her on how she wrestles and wrestles like a girl. Julia, thank you very much for coming on, and yeah, best of luck to you.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks.
Julia Salata, everybody. Future world champion. You know what's funny? I wanted to ask you this. Why do you think it's taken so long for women's wrestling to sort of explode? I mean, you have women's MMA, you have women's MMA, you have women's boxing. You even have all these, women's softball. It's just shocking to me that they got to wait till 2023, 2024 to get a national championship. You think by now that'd been already moved forward, huh?
Yeah, honestly, I was a little naive to it, you know, before I, you know, was introduced to her, and you know, then I started following her. I was like, you know, it's crazy that it's not commonplace in schools, and you know, in colleges and high schools mostly. You know, so it's great that you know she's doing this. You know, with the Wrestle Like a Girl and the How She Wrestles, and you know, and that's crazy. A week and a half, and they're getting like 100,000, you know, 100,000 responses already. So that's great.
What's gonna grow?
Yeah, let's move on. News and notes. You know, we could touch on Joe Kelly another time, but we can move on to something else in the MLB. Jose Reyes. I'm a Mets fan, so I gotta mention that Jose Reyes has officially retired from Major League Baseball, and you know it's obviously he wasn't playing the way you know, he did when he first came up and, you know, in his prime, you know, but it's a big hit, you know, because I was still, I mean, I wasn't a Yankee fan, but, you know, I was still pretty young when Jeter came into the scene and stuff.
Yeah.
But Reyes, I was like junior in high school. So like, that was like when I really started paying attention. So like that, you know, him and Wright were those two that, you know, I really looked up to and, you know, really looked at the, you know, just the heart of the Mets. And, you know, it's definitely bittersweet, you know, to see him go for sure.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how his time is flying. I mean, he came into the league in 2003. Like, yeah. Remember, he was the budding star talking about taking over Jeter and all that. And, you know, when I saw his retirement announcement, I realized, my God, I mean, has it been that? I mean, how time just flew. And this kid who was a kid when he got here and to have the career that he had, I mean, truly incredible. Look, he had his ups and downs. You know, I think he won a batting title with the Mets, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was the year. Remember, he had that those like two at bats and then they pulled him so he wouldn't lower his batting average or whatever it is. But listen, he had a productive career with the Mets. You know, they went to the NLCS in 06, 07. They had a great season. But it didn't work out. But I think Jose Reyes is, you know, he should be a if they have a Ring of Honor or Mets Hall of Fame, I think he's going to be in that, no doubt about it. I think he was, you know, during the time of when he was here with New York, he was clearly, I mean, he wasn't in Jeter's class, obviously, but he was a big name in New York City. So I think he's going to be missed. But at 37, I think he realized it was just time to hang it up. You know, it was just time to hang it up and then move on and do different things. Look, he's still a young guy. He can do a lot of other things, you know, be productive in society. So, I wish him the best, you know. Good for him.
Yeah, and I just lost my train of thought. Sorry. Okay, so we can move on to NFL a little bit. Actually, you want to touch on the NBA since we started already today?
Talk a little NBA. I mean, we got Lakers and Clippers on right now. And then we just had the Jazz just played the Pelicans.
Yep.
Had some Jazz. But look, I think it's good. I think, you know, it's interesting how the NBA has this set up. They got the players socially distant. They got, you know, the way the arena set up is interesting. I think this is good. I think the NBA is one of the few leagues that is going to have an issue, I think, unless these guys get out of the bubble and break their protocols. I think the NBA is going to be okay. And, you know, it's interesting to see. Is LeBron going to be able to win his fourth title? I think this is his best shot at it. But the question is, will he be able to, you know, do they have the team to do it? But we'll wait and see. But this is fun. I think this is great. It's exciting. It's different.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's – hey, the sports are back. I mean, you know, we can't pick and choose. You know, this is it, you know, this is what we're getting. You know, we're getting everyone playing in the same arena, no fans, and we're gonna take it, you know, exactly as we're giving it. You know, same thing is gonna happen with the NHL this weekend too. You know,
yeah, isn't it great though? Like, you come home, there's a game on, like, you come home, there's something to look forward to, and I think the country's just, that's what they've been missing, right? Like, something to look forward to. Hey, yeah, we got the Yankees on tonight. Or we got the NBA going on tonight. We got the NHL starting up. Like, something to look forward to that'll get our minds off the real world issues. I think this, and it's just great, man. So hopefully the NBA has a good season, but wait and see.
You're absolutely right. You know, like, I get home, I'm like, all right, only one more hour. and then with them playing 60 games in 66 days, as they were planning to, you know, there's not many days off. You know, for the Mets, like, you don't have to have too many of those Mondays off, and you'd be like, all right, there's a Met game tonight. Oh, there's a Met game tonight.
Yeah.
You know, eventually I might get sick and tired of watching them because they're not winning and really just giving up the season. But, you know, I think it's going to be a close race for pretty much every team, you know, so at least September might have some meaning again for Mets baseball. You know, because it might be pretty close, especially if the Marlins and Phillies don't play games.
Right. Well, look,
if the Mets don't end up with more wins than the Phillies after they took 7 days off, I don't know what to say.
Look, I think the Mets are going to be in a good spot, man. I mean, look, the Mets, they got off to a little bit of a rocky start, but they're, you know, they're 500 right now. And I just think that they're going to play some good ball. I just think they have a young team. I think their back end, they got to solve that problem with Edwin Diaz. I think they got to get him out of the closing role, put Patances there, put Diaz any way away from any pressure situation. You put him away in a pressure situation, put Patances in there, and then roll with it.
Say that, but the Patances, a Mets closer curse doesn't hit him. So, I mean.
You can put Seth Lugo in there. I mean,
yeah, but he's not the closer. He's the long man. So it's like, I think it's just the person that's closing.
They got to figure it out, Mike.
The history of who they had as closer.
I mean, look.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, yes, it's worth the shot. Of course.
I do it. 100% I do it. Only because he's been in the cauldron. He's played in that kind of atmosphere with the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you put him in there. I think he'll thrive because I think he likes that kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. NHL is starting as well on Saturday. They're starting their playoffs up in Canada. Two different hubs over there. So similar to the NBA, and I think they'll be okay to finish off these playoffs and finish off their season as well.
What do you think of the name that Seattle got? The Kraken.
I like it. I like the logo too.
Do you?
Yeah. I like the logo. I like the artwork. And you know, it's cool. I think they went about things the right way, I guess. And it's definitely cool to see that new team coming into the league. I gotta admit though, like I gotta pay attention a little bit more to hockey. I have in the last few years, I've been watching a little bit more, but I need to step it up a little bit.
I think that's both of us. I'll be honest with you. Hockey, I've been following the Rangers on and off. I think the last time they went to the Stanley Cup was in 2013 when they played the Kings. I remember following them back then. I think we should go to a game. We should check out a game. I've been dying to go to a hockey game. So it's interesting. But, it's good that Seattle had a team over there. I mean, they lost the Sonics. I mean, they got the Seahawks, and they got the they got the Mariners. So for them to get a hockey team up there, I think that's pretty cool. Grows the sport. I think they get another team up there, grows the economy. I think it's great. I think they need to bring the NBA back there, though. So if they can find a way to get an NBA team up there, bring the Sonics, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, we'll see about that. And the Sonics were the Warriors, right?
No, Sonics went to the Thunder. They became the whole Oklahoma City Thunder.
Okay. Pete Alonso looks like he got hit. Let's talk a little bit more COVID. So we got more people opting out of the NFL. The biggest name yet is Damian Williams. So yeah. Super Bowl winning running back for the Chiefs. That only screams, nothing but potential for the rookie, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, So I think he's going to be a big piece of that Chiefs offense now that Damian Williams is out. And I don't really think many people can compete against him. They don't really have that much star power behind him. Damian Williams is, probably seen his last down as a Chief. But also in baseball, Nick Markakis opted out, and now he's opting back in. So these opt-outs might end up not being opt-outs after all. They might change their mind and end up coming back. So I guess we're going to have to see what happens and how that unfolds. Obviously, if, the situation improves, their decision might change. I mean, Nick Markakis, I don't understand. Like, you opt out, then 30 people end up getting COVID in the MLB, and he's like, all right, you know what? I think it's okay. I'll come back.
Yeah.
That was a little that was a little befuddling, but you know.
I think for guys like Markakis and Damian Williams, these guys that opt out, I think, you know, when they make these decisions, you know, they make it for their families and to, you know, for health or whatever. And I think what happens to these guys is once the season starts, they get that bug. And it's like, I got to get back out there. And I think what's going to happen in the NFL, a lot of these guys that opted out, I think a few of the guys are going to be like, you know what, except for maybe the guys who have really serious health issues with their families, you know, like Nate Soldier.
Yes.
You know, guys like that, I think they might get the bug and just say, hey, I'm coming out to play. Now, we'll wait and see, obviously. But I just think that you can never let that bug go. You never let that high of playing professional sports and being part of a team go. So, I mean, you know, he's doing what he feels is best for his family. I mean, the guy just won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But the question, and it's, you brought it up. I mean, this kid that just got drafted, if he starts playing well, right, is Damon Williams going to be like, all right, I'm in danger of losing my job. Let me get off my ass and get back in this thing. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, with the NFL, I mean, more and more guys, every day we're hearing more and more guys opt out. And I'm just, you know, I'm worried that, you know, the league is going to be void of, like, top-end players, you know? Like, so far, like, real big names haven't opted out. And I think they're going to, for the most part, I don't think we're going to see that, but I'm a little concerned, you know, with some of these rosters, some of these players aren't going to be there.
I think Aaron Rodgers is going to opt out from just lack of any support from the Packers front office.
I could see him drinking some tequila, you know, be like, look, I'm not coming back. I'm chilling.
Well, actually, no. Devin Funchess, the only addition in the wide receiver core that the Packers got, he opted out. So now it's like Rodgers is like, all right, well, we're – right back to where we started from. So I wouldn't be surprised if he hops out, to be honest with you.
And
he broke up with Danica Patrick, I heard on the radio too.
Yes, that would lead any man to drink, that's for sure. But for those of you who don't know, Aaron Rodgers, obviously the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. Devin Funchess was the wide receiver with Carolina. He came to Green Bay. And Danica Patrick, star NASCAR racer. So, yeah. You know, maybe he might be happier now that he's broken up with her and he's back in that world. Who knows? You know, I just hope we don't have any more big names leave the game, because I think the game needs the stars to shine.
Yeah. Well, speaking about the Chiefs, you know, another running back left the Chiefs. You know, he was let go from the Chiefs. But now LeSean McCoy just signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and joining Brady, Gronk, Evans, and Goodwin. And they didn't have much of a running game to begin with, you know, with Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber. But I think that McCoy's good years are behind him. I'm sure he could play some type of role in that Tom Brady type of offense. What do you think?
Yeah, LeSean McCoy is a veteran, right? So he's gonna come in there. He's a professional. He's a pro. He knows how to prepare, and I think he's gonna come in there. And with Brady there, I think he's gonna be good in some certain spots, catching the ball out of the backfield, you know, when they need a big play on third down. I think that's what he's gonna be good for. I don't know that he's gonna get big carries and big, you know, in big moments, you know, in big time minutes. I just don't see that in LeSean McCoy anymore. So if he can come in, be a serviceable back, you know, give him a few downs, you know, give him, you know, I don't know, 8 to 10 carries a game. You're not going to give him the ball 25 times anymore. So 8 to 10 carries a game, make some plays out of the backfield, and be kind of like a peace of mind, you know, back for Brady, knowing that, hey, I got LeSean McCoy there. I got a pro there. I'll be okay. You know, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be serviceable. You know, look, that team in Tampa Bay, it more and more, man, it's just loading up. I mean, they're looking good. They need to stay healthy. They need to stay COVID-free. And they need to grow some cohesion real quick. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. Right now, they're on paper, they're looking good, but they still got to play on the field.
Yeah. I definitely like their prospects for this year. And I'm excited to see it happen and see what happens. Granted that we have a football season, you know, the Bills just sent – Buffalo Bills sent home all rookies from training camp because they had five COVID positive results. Not good news. Still, over a month left before the season starts. You know, hopefully they can figure this stuff out before then and put a plan in place that's better than what MLB's got going on. It might not be as good as what NBA and NHL have going on, but they have to figure out something. I really just don't agree. I mean, they scrapped all preseason games, which is something to limit the contact. But when you're playing the regular season games, you've gotten it's inevitable. You're going to be making contact. I don't really agree with teams flying cross country. You know, there's like 36 states now that are in the quarantine zone. We have mandatory 14-day quarantine. 36 states. It's pretty significant. And, I think that there just needs to be a lot more protocols in place to protect these players. First and foremost is because, they're human beings. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what their profession is, that their health and safety is of the utmost importance. So hopefully they can figure it out. I guess one quick thing to touch on, the New York Knicks officially have signed Tom Thibodeau to be their next head coach.
I like it. The Knicks need some credibility as a head coach. They've been going through head coaches for the last 20 years. They need some stability there. Tom Thibodeau is a proven winner. He was an assistant coach under Jeff Van Gundy, so he has some sort of, he has a lineage. He has a history of that, of those teams that played. They were tough-minded. They played tough defense. The city loved them. They love New York. People love playing there. And I think he's going to be good for RJ Barrett. I mean, him and Kevin Knox and Ntilikina got to toughen up a little bit, man. They got to be a little more tougher. They got to be a little more rugged, I think. But I think he's going to be good for them in growing them. And I think he's going to be able to turn around the franchise with Leon Rose and Worldwide West. Now you got Tibbs there. You got some players. You have some draft picks because of the Porzingis trade. Mm-hmm. You got 5 years. Now is the time to rebuild this team. Because I think Knicks fans are tired of, Phil Jackson is going to make it this. And Mike Woodson and Carmelo Anthony, I'm coming home. And, we're going to do this. And, enough. I mean, this franchise and the fans of the franchise have been through just 20 years of misery and agony, and it's enough. And I think with the hiring of Thibodeau, we start turning that page to something new, something different, go on our winning ways and bring the franchise back to where it should be. So I like the signing. I think it's gonna be an immense difference for the franchise, and hopefully we'll get to go to some games and see them win.
Yeah. I've learned just to not expect anything and then just
it's just
hope for the best. Yeah. Because if you expect something and it doesn't happen, then you're let down. If you don't expect it and it happens, then you're just ecstatic. So I mean, that's how I've lived my life as a Mets, Jets, Knicks fan. So I'm gonna keep doing that. So I'm hoping that this is the good move. I'm hoping it develops positive results at the end of it. But we will see. I'm not gonna crown this guy as anything yet, but we will see what next year holds and the next few years at that. Well,
you know what?
Today,
I have expectations. You bring in Leon Rose, you bring in these guys, Worldwide West, you bring in Thibodeau. I expect this team to turn around and be in the playoffs in the next 2 to 3 years. I'm over it. I'm over 20 win seasons. I'm over losing $20 bets to people thinking the Knicks are going to go to the playoffs. I expect them to be a playoff team in the next 2 to 3 years. Period. End of story.
Okay. Hey, you go about things. Yeah. I'll go about things mine. All right.
My Nick rant go.
At the end of the day, if they go to the playoffs, we're both happy. But if they don't go to the playoffs, then you're the only one miserable. And I'll be like, well, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. We're taking the show on the road. We're gonna do a show out there. We're gonna get out there and we're gonna do a podcast out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And definitely at a hockey game. I mean, when we can actually go back to games, we're definitely taking this show on the road and we're going to be talking to the fans right then and there, you know, live at the game. All right. Well, until Tuesday, have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the start of the NBA. Enjoy the NHL playoffs. We will see you next week, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Have a good night, everybody.
Good weekend, everybody. Peace.